WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Wendy Gillette. The Trump administration is running into some issues as it works to deport undocumented migrants. Colombia has blocked two military planes from the San Diego area filled with deportees. Immigration reporter Camila Montoya-Galvez on CBS's Face the Nation.
We are told now that the president of Colombia, Gustavo Petro, objected to the use of military planes and blocked those deportations. So this shows that the administration will still face significant diplomatic challenges as it tries to oversee this aggressive immigration plan.
In return, President Trump has threatened 25% tariffs and sanctions. ICE confirms more arrests today in Chicago. Hundreds of undocumented migrants were arrested and flown out of the U.S. last week. The Trump administration says the majority have criminal records. Border czar Tom Homan told ABC this is just the start of the operation.
But you're seeing the numbers steadily increase, the number of arrests nationwide as we open up the aperture. Right now it's concentrating public safety threats, national security threats. That's a smaller population. So we're going to do this on priority basis.
Vice President J.D. Vance granted his first interview since taking office to CBS's Face the Nation, calling Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth a disruptor and applauding his confirmation and other changes.
There are people who don't like that big change, but it is necessary, and it's explicitly what Donald J. Trump ran on. And I think part of the reason why the American people elected him their 47th president.
Senate Democrats are expected to denounce the president's mass pardons of January 6th rioters. Here is CBS's Scott McFarland.
This will be a formal resolution denouncing the pardons of violent rioters from January 6th by President Trump. It'll be led by Washington State Senior Democratic Senator Patty Murray and dozens of other members of the Senate Democratic Caucus. It seems certain there'll be Republican opposition, but it is a messaging bill for Democrats to draw that contrast.
President Trump says he wants Arab nations to accept more Palestinian refugees to clear out Gaza. That's not likely to gain traction, as reporter Linda Gradstein explains from Jerusalem.
Jordan's foreign minister Ayman Safadi said his country firmly rejects what he called any forced displacement of Palestinians. He said that Jordan is for Jordanians and Palestine is for Palestinians. He spoke after President Trump suggested that Egypt and Jordan could absorb many of the 2 million Palestinians who are currently living in Gaza.
The president is sending 2,000-pound bombs to Israel that former President Biden had halted. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Thank you, President Trump, for keeping your promise to give Israel the tools it needs to defend itself, to confront our common enemies, and to secure a future of peace and prosperity.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. 1 in 3 kids living in rural areas of Wisconsin is insured by Medicaid, and Congress is considering cutting some of the program's funding. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
The nationwide study from Georgetown University Center for Children and Families used census data to compare how many people living in rural areas are insured by Medicaid. William Park Sutherland with Kids Forward explains northern Wisconsin counties above Highway 29 have higher than average rates of children enrolled.
We really are leveraging our future by targeting a program that not only, but one of its most important roles is protecting the health of kids.
About 1.5 million Wisconsinites are insured through Badger Care, the state Medicaid program. It makes up about 26% of the state budget, providing health care coverage for low-income residents from birth to age 64.
There's just no way to cut out this much of the program, right? $2 trillion, and not hurt children, not hurt seniors, and not hurt people with disabilities who depend on Medicaid along with parents and caregivers.
He says cuts would also risk increasing the number of uninsured people, up the amount of medical debt and financial insecurity in the state, and potentially deter people from seeking care. Wisconsin is one of 10 states that has not expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. A Wisconsin Policy Forum study shows the state could save $1.7 billion over the next 2 years if it did. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A sunny sky today, west winds and highs in the upper 20s. Tonight, upper teens with mostly clear skies. That west breeze continues. On Monday, mostly sunny skies. Southwest winds will gust over 35, highs in the lower 40s. Currently 26 degrees.
Earl Ingram.
The dismantling of diversity, equity, and inclusion under Donald Trump has already begun. On the next show, we'll talk with Dr. Eva Martinez-Paulus about what DEI really is.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10. A new choice, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
There was a whirlwind of news this week as Donald Trump was inaugurated as the 47th President of the United States. In one of his first actions in office, he signed an executive order targeting birthright citizenship in the 14th Amendment. We go to the Dom Salvia show first this week on Spotlight, along with co-host for the day, Earl Ingram, where they interviewed Josh Call, Attorney General for Wisconsin, to hear how our state is joining a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of this order.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You can be a big part, 855-752-4842. We have a jam-packed show for you today. Of course, we've got Jess P.S. working the board for us. My co-host for the day, Earl Ingram, host of the Earl Ingram Show, right here on Civic Media, 8 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. And also later on in the show, Bill Press, podcaster, prognosticator, friend of ours. He's going to join us at 5 o'clock. Of course, at the end of the day, we do the tell us something good, right, Jess? We have to end it on a positive note.
Every single day.
Every
We've
single
day. Never forgotten.
Never, ever. And right now, jazzed as hell to introduce to you from the top, Josh Call, Attorney General from the great state of Wisconsin. Josh, welcome to the Dom Salvia Show.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
It's a pleasure, Josh. Appreciate you making the time today. Obviously, the issue of the day, and there is breaking news on this, the administration's executive order that Trump signed, basically doing away with, by the executive order, birthright citizenship. The breaking news, federal judge today issued a two-week restraining order striking that down. So that is where we stand right now. And this is one of many lawsuits out there. And Josh, you have involved Wisconsin in one of the many lawsuits. Let's start at the beginning, if you would, please, sir. What was the executive order? What was it intended to do? And why do you think it's problematic and unconstitutional?
Yeah, so first of all, on Donald Trump's first day in office, he signed a number of executive orders, and one of them purported to end birthright citizenship for some kids. So these are certain kids who are born in the United States, and Trump was trying to deny them citizenship. The problem with that is, first of all, the U.S. Constitution very clearly says that if you're born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that you're a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
There's also U.S. Supreme Court precedent that goes back more than 100 years directly on this issue. And on top of that, there's federal law that makes clear that kids who are born in this country are U.S. citizens. And so this is clearly an unconstitutional action. The court in Washington State, the federal court there today, said that this action was blatantly unconstitutional. And so on the first day in office, the new president was blatantly violating the U.S. Constitution. So we have stepped in along with a number of other states to protect the rights of kids who are born in our state and thereby are Wisconsin citizens.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Josh Call, Attorney General from the great state of Wisconsin, joining us along with Earl Ingram as well. Josh, what I didn't understand, and the logic, and my understanding, this was brought up during the discussion today. If a person is not subject to the jurisdiction of this country, and therefore, how could the federal government prosecute them or state government prosecute them? It seems asinine on its face, sir.
Yeah, it's an incredibly narrow exception, and courts have actually weighed in on what this means. But if, for example, if you are a foreign diplomat in the country and you have diplomatic immunity, that would be an example of somebody who's not subject to the jurisdiction. It's a very narrow category.
Right.
It does not apply to kids who are born in the United States under circumstances other than those very rare circumstances. And so this is not a serious argument. The other thing is, these kinds of arguments have been made before and they've been rejected. So
yeah.
What we have is the Trump administration directing federal agencies, and that in turn means state agencies have to take action, to do something that has been established to be unconstitutional. And that's not at all what our president should be doing. He just took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. And here he is on his first day in office violating it.
Not surprisingly, unfortunately. Attorney General Call, my understanding there was a late filing on Wednesday from the Trump administration challenging whether or not the states have standing. What's your thought on that?
Well, this has big impacts on states. This is an argument we see in a lot of cases, but and we laid this out in the case that we're involved in. It also came up in this case in Washington. But there are a number of things that states have to do to comply with this order if it's put into effect. So for example, right now when there's a child born in Wisconsin, we know that that's a U.S. citizen. But if this order that the Trump administration put in place were to go into effect, there would have to be an apparatus set up for making determination on a case-by-case basis. It would also potentially impact federal funding of programs.
Mm.
So there's a real impact on the states. The court in Washington obviously didn't find that issue to be much of a concern. And I'm very optimistic that we will both win on standing and ultimately win this case.
Josh Call, Attorney General from the great state of Wisconsin. Josh, what about the state's role in immigration policy? And I asked that question in the context of a three-page Justice Department memo that apparently started circulating yesterday, saying that if the local and state officials don't assist, that what, the federal DOJ is going to go after them. What, sir, you're the head LEO here in the state of Wisconsin. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, I think with this new administration, it's important to separate out what's real from what's just a scare tactic or what's bluster. And I think that this new memo falls into the later category. The reality is, first of all, that state and local officials all over the country follow the law and comply with the law. At the same time, we have a role to play in stepping up to protect people's rights. And our system is based on the idea that states are their own sovereigns and they have a right to take action. That's a long established tradition in the United States. And the Trump administration is trying to run over that. Again, the Constitution has set up this system and the Trump administration is disregarding it. And it's important to note that all this stuff is happening in the context of the pardons that were issued on
right.
the first day that Trump had in office. Over 1,500 people associated with January 6th were pardoned. And that includes people who engaged in violent activities. A few of them received terrorism enhancements in their sentences. And what Donald Trump did is he sided with people convicted of crimes over the police officers who were the victims of those crimes. So, again, it's a complete disrespect for the rule of law in our system of government. It's a really disastrous first week that the Trump administration has had.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Attorney General Josh Call joining us this segment. Just a practical matter, and I want to get to the pardons in just a moment. Help our audience understand why all the different separate lawsuits. I mean, every state could have done one. Wisconsin joined on one. The one that the federal judge in Seattle ruled on today was from four other states. What's the strategy or theory behind that, Josh?
Well, you know, we work very well with other AGs around the country. And in a lot of cases, we do that in a bipartisan fashion. So, for example, when we work to hold opioid companies accountable, and work that's still ongoing, by the way, you know, we have worked across the aisle in a bipartisan fashion. But in other issues where there's a partisan divide, like there has been with birthright citizenship, we work together with other Democratic AGs. And so that's what's happened here. Now, as you can imagine, there are a lot of states in the country, and we don't all agree necessarily in every case on strategy or approach. And so it's not uncommon for there to be more than one suit going on. I believe there are also there's at least one other case that was brought by a nonprofit group. So it's not unusual. And what tends to happen is either courts will rule consistently, and that will sort of resolve the issue, or in an issue that either the courts disagree on, or that's of sufficiently high profile that the Supreme Court wants to get involved, the U.S. Supreme Court ultimately resolves the issue, and that governs for all the cases. So we'll see which case proceeds the quickest here, but you know, we feel good about the case we're a part of, and I'm optimistic we'll be successful.
So, good afternoon, Attorney General Call. How are you?
Good, good. Good afternoon, Earl.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice again. But I guess what I'd like to ask you is Donald Trump freelancing? I mean, all of these, he has attorneys around him who understand the implications of the decisions that he's making. Or is it that there are gray areas and the attorneys that he has with him are going to challenge these gray areas that you and others know are not gray areas, but, you know, a misunderstanding on their issues? Do you think he's doing these things on his own?
No, I think that this is a part of a very carefully laid out strategy. Now, the Trump administration had a lot of time to think about what it was going to be doing when it came into office. And, you know, one thing we've seen with Donald Trump throughout his career is that he has gotten really his entire party to back down and get behind him on whatever issue it is he's addressing. And I think we're seeing a similar effort here. You know, we've seen it with these CEOs of tech companies who are all of a sudden making these huge donations to the inaugural and then showed up at the inauguration. We've seen some concerning self-censorship from the press. And I think this is consistent with that. It's an effort to get the courts or policymakers to back down. And we see that with these threats that are being made in this DOJ memo. But here's the thing. People are not going to back down. People are going to stand up for the rights of, in my case, of Wisconsinites, and in the case of my colleagues in other states, the rights of the people in their states. And we're going to ensure that our Constitution is protected and the rights of Americans are upheld.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salve Show. Attorney General Josh Call for about 60 more seconds. Josh, with regards to the pardon, as the chief top law enforcement officer in the state of Wisconsin, you know, officers have come from all sorts of political stripes, and they put themselves on the line. And to see this reaction from Donald Trump to pardon even the most violent of criminals and put these folks back out on the street, have you talked to regular law enforcement officers, and what's their reaction been?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are a lot of folks out there who normally back Trump who've been critical, including some Republican members of Congress in Wisconsin who've said this went too far. I believe there's a police union that recently came out and criticized this. But you've got Donald Trump opening the jailhouse doors here with people who, in some cases, were convicted of violent crimes to side with them over the police. It's disgraceful.
Absolutely disgraceful. Josh Call, Attorney General from the great state of Wisconsin, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for standing up to Donald Trump and for the Constitution. You know, they used to call him, the Republican Party would be proud to be called the Party of Law and Order. I like to think they're the Party of Assault and Battery these days. Josh, thank you so much. We'll look forward to speaking to you real soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salve Show. Earl Ingram joining me today. You can do so as well on the phones, 855-752-4842. We got a stacked show, man. Bill Press coming in at 5 o'clock. Plus, tell us something good at the end of the show. Once again, 855-75-CIVIC. Come back with us.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Howler House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pin still set by people? Swear, and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Holler House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pins still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Matt and Air on Air. And Jane and Greg continue the conversation started by Dom about some of the executive orders passed by Trump this week. They focus on his broad pardon of January 6th insurrectionists and discuss some of the Wisconsinites who were at the Capitol that day.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane, Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Sweet Galby on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842. We'll leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 10:30 news, State Senator Chris Larson is going to join us. We're going to talk about drinking. Mm-hmm. In Wisconsin, binge drinking in particular in Wisconsin. It's dry January.
Yep.
A lot of people abstaining this month to give their livers a little break to breathe. But if you have any favorite mocktail recipes, mm-hmm. if you're taking part in dry January, we would love to hear from you and hear what your replacement is.
If dry January has led you to maybe just not drinking. I have friends who started with dry January and then said, I'll try February. And either they have far decreased or just quit drinking altogether. So,
and it was just a matter of, you know what, I don't miss it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we'll talk about this more with Senator Larson, but I truly believe you quit something when you want to, not when you feel like you're forced or...
Absolutely.
You have to want it.
Yes, you do. You can't make it. It's not about making a deal with anybody.
Yep.
So we'll kick that around a little bit after 10:30. I did want to talk a little bit more about the blanket pardons that Donald Trump issued immediately upon entering office. And I think that this is important detail. J.D. Vance allegedly pushed for a blanket pardon early in the discussions heading into Inauguration Day. This is the part that kills me. Staffers felt that a case-by-case review of all 1,500 cases would be too onerous.
Too much work.
Too much work. So Trump just landed on clemency for all of them to get it in the past.
He actually said something that we can't say on the air about it.
Just do it. I don't care.
Which, from his standpoint, was very smart, because if those clemencies and that those considerations hung over his head for even a few months,
dragged on,
that's the question. It's like, hey, where's your health care plan? Hey, where is your fix for all of our spending problems you say we have? Hey, what about the clemencies for January 6th? So just
this way, it's done.
Just done,
and we assume people will forget.
Mm-hmm.
Among the people that he pardoned, all the best people.
Yeah.
All the best traders. Stuart Rhodes of Texas, Kelly Meigs of Florida, the founder and current leader of the Oath Keepers.
Yeah.
As well as members of the Proud Boys. And the ex-wife of Stuart Rhodes told Jim Acosta on CNN she's afraid for her life now that he's been released. And I think back to the case where there was a son who actually reported his father. Mm-hmm. As one of the people who rioted and attacked the Capitol on January 6th of 2021, he's got to be terrified.
Yeah, it's his father called his father referred to him as a traitor. Isn't that rich? That's funny. That's funny.
His father called his son a traitor
for reporting him. Yes.
Thanksgiving's gonna be
fun. And it's a Newsweek article headline: Man who reported father to FBI after January 6th, quote, terrified.
Oh, I bet.
Of Trump pardons. So it's
Michael. You know Michael Fanone.
Yeah.
Who was one of the officers who almost died in that attack after being stunned repeatedly? He actually had a heart attack.
Yeah.
During this attack. He's really worried, not just about himself and his mother has been swatted.
Yeah.
The man's mother. My mother has been the victim of swatting incidents. She's had bricks thrown at her home in the middle of the night. Recently, when she was raking leaves in the front yard, somebody pulled up a truck and threw a bag of crap on her. All the best people.
Yeah.
All the best people.
Just as a clarification, I want to say really quick, we were talking about the elections coming up. The spring primary election is the 18th of February. That's next month. It's Tuesday, February 18th. The general will be April the 1st, which is also a Tuesday. So just mark those on your calendars.
You need to turn out for the it's an important election. It really is. And I know it's like, hey, Vade, and we just do this. Yes, we did.
You did. But
we live in Wisconsin. We're always voting.
We're always. Yay.
Representative democracy.
Yep.
We need you to come out, especially if we want to keep the fair maps that we just got.
Yeah. And we're gonna have referendums for the Wisconsin Constitution again. So
absolutely, and they're counting on a big Republican turnout for this election based on that constitutional amendment, which is therefore why we need folks to get out and make sure you vote in this Supreme Court race between Susan Crawford and Brad Schimmel.
Absolutely,
really, really, really important.
Yeah.
Another thing, going back to the mass pardon of all of the traitors who attacked the Capitol on January 6th. There's a lot of concern about, and again, because they couldn't go through this on a case-by-case basis because it's just too time.
It's not enough people.
I have other things to do.
Yeah.
There is recidivism from people who are released from jail.
Mm-hmm.
So if even five of the people that he just released go out and go on to commit further crimes, that kind of makes you look bad. But again, with this administration, nothing sticks.
No, because whatever they do, it'll be for patriotism and for the country. And I will continue to say this, that these, what was it, 1,500 people? 1,500 people now have a pardon in their back pocket from the President of the United States of America. If you don't think that they don't feel some sort of divine immunity, you're out of your mind.
Absolutely.
This is going to backfire on this country so hard. And I think that it, once again, it is a double standard. It is waiting to blow up in our faces. And these people who are arrested are not well. They're not people who should be. They haven't learned their lesson. Let's put it that way.
And I just want to put the cherry on the sundae with this comment from Republican John Thune.
Yeah.
Who's taken over as the Senate Majority Leader from Mitch McConnell. He says Republicans are all focused on moving forward. They don't look back. Okay.
What did Mike Johnson say about the Biden family?
Oh, well, except for the Biden family.
Yeah, they're going to.
Well, except for Hunter Biden.
They're going
to. And even James Comer has said that he still wants to go after Hunter Biden.
Yeah, they want to revisit the pardons and, you know, but they're not looking back, folks.
Oh, and everyone deserves forgiveness.
Yes, everyone deserves.
You know, Moses Mike Johnson says everyone deserves a second chance.
Yeah.
Except for Hunter Biden.
Especially his laptop.
Pretty much any Biden.
Yeah.
All right. News is coming up next. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on air. We're coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network.
Chuck it on that one, you chuck it on this one, you chuck it on your mother and you chuck it. Matt and Air on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
CBS News Brief. President Trump plans to impose a 25% tariff on goods coming into this country from Colombia, going up to 50% after 1 week.
Well, as a coffee drinker, this is obviously very distressing because coffee's already expensive enough, as are all kinds of food items.
Economics professor Madeline Zavodny of the University of Florida on a major Colombian export. Trump isn't happy Colombia blocked U.S. deportation flights from landing, objecting to the use of military planes. Democratic Colorado Congressman Jason Crow objects to Trump's pardons for January 6 rioters, telling CBS's Face the Nation.
Well, I don't want to hear Donald Trump or J.D. Vance or anyone else in this administration talk about backing the blue, talk about supporting law enforcement when they just released over 1,000 cop beaters.
The Bills play the Chiefs in Kansas City at 6:30 Eastern time, the winner going to the Super Bowl. Here's a hopeful Bills fan.
We're all behind them because we really, really, really want this win.
CBS News Brief, I'm Michael Toscano.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The Bucks get clipped in L.A. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks began their West Coast trip with a loss to the Clippers last night, 127-117. Giannis Antetokounmpo led Milwaukee with 36 points.
In the fourth quarter, wasn't able to take care of the ball as well. You know, they got momentum, and it was very hard for us to get back to the game. We got to do a better job. You know, next time we're in that same position, just take care of the ball.
NFL, the NFC and AFC championship games going on. We'll recap them after the games. And is Aaron Rodgers ready to retire? Former Packers linebacker Clay Matthews on the Dan Patrick Show.
Watching him this year, you see those glimpses of, you know, what he has. And I thought for me it was pretty telling when he walked off the field with Devontae with his arm around him. And we remember when he walked off the field with Randall Cobb in Green Bay, what that meant. So we'll see if I'm reading into it too much, just being a fanboy or what's going to happen. But so I'd love to see him.
You think he's going to play one more year?
I think he should play one more year. Do I think he will? I don't know.
That's Clay Matthews with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Roddy Price. A sunny sky today. West winds and highs in the upper 20s. Tonight, upper teens with mostly clear skies. That west breeze continues. On Monday, mostly sunny skies. Southwest winds will gust over 35. Highs in the lower 40s. Currently 26 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We have updates on important state Supreme Court cases involving the outcome of a November 2024 North Carolina Supreme Court election and whether Pennsylvania can count mail ballots with missing dates. First to North Carolina, where after two recounts, a race for Supreme Court justice is separated by 734 votes, with 5.5 million ballots cast. Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs was declared the winner over Appeals Court Judge Jefferson Griffin, but Griffin refused to concede and appealed to invalidate as many as 60,000 voters. Griffin's challenge includes voters with felony convictions, despite North Carolina's returning citizen rights restoration. He and the North Carolina GOP also challenge voters with incomplete registration information, some of whom are even elected officials and have voted for years. Wednesday, the Carolina Journal reported that the North Carolina Supreme Court refused to hear the case in a 5-1 decision, sending it back to Wake County Superior Court to consider Judge Griffin's complaints. Back in October, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court refused to rule on whether on-time mail-in ballots missing a signing date could be counted. Of the two challenges filed, the ACLU's argument that rejecting the ballots is a violation of the state constitution's free and equal elections clause will be considered. No trial date has been set. We have more on both cases at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Where are you at with dome stadiums?
Oh, love them. Snow games are awesome, but it's also a risk of injuries and everything.
Give me a dome anytime. I don't want to see elite athletes running on snow like it's me playing out there and tripping and slipping. I want to watch those guys run. I want the receivers to run and catch their passes. I want to see great athletes being great athletes.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
It is the weekend. That means coming up on the show, we'll break down all the news that you might have missed and wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we go to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. This week, Pat welcomed on Assembly Representative Francesca Hong from Madison to talk about the issues she's focusing on in the legislature during the new session, including her main emphasis on a proposal of healthy school meals for all.
This is the anniversary of the birth of the late Sam Cooke, singing What a Wonderful World, What It Could Be. And that will kick off this week's homeroom segment where we talk about public education, great things about it and the threats to it as well. And so we are visiting today with State Assembly Representative Francesca Hong, who is on the Assembly Education Committee. Fran, good morning. Thank you so much for being here today.
Good morning, Pat. So happy to be here.
I did not check my roster carefully, so I'm asking out of complete ignorance. Are you the ranking Democrat on education this year?
I am the ranking Dem this year.
All right. So that's all things Assembly Education. This is our point person who's helping to defend our schools and also put things in to our education system that, you know, should be there, like adequate funding, or in this case, healthy school meals for all. And I will say again, and I will say it all the time, this shouldn't be a thing. We shouldn't be having this debate about kids, you know, and not being able to afford being able to have lunch at school. And yet this is where we are. We've talked about this the fourth year the bill's been put up, but give folks a little background on the bill and then we'll get into how we can get this thing to make some progress.
Thanks so much, Pat. This is one of my favorite bills to introduce and one of my favorite days of the year when we can gather at the Capitol and talk about feeding our kids. This is our third introduction of the Healthy School Meals for All legislation, and it's simple. It's a bill that reimburses schools for feeding kids. It doesn't matter what type of school you go to. It can be a school for the blind, our public schools. And what it ensures is that every kid has access to a healthy, free breakfast and lunch.
That's it. Seriously, that's it. We don't charge kids for riding down the school bus. There's no fare box on the school bus. Why would we have one at the cafeteria? Look, we've heard either for fiscal reasons or my favorite is when opponents of the bill say, you know, well, we're subsidizing lunch for wealthier families that can afford it. That's a weird time to suddenly be against, you know, subsidies for wealthier families, given how much we send away to, you know, school vouchers, for example. It's a very novel argument. So let's not even debate it. Let me ask instead, and, you know, be as candid as you want to. Do you feel like the bill has been making any progress year by year that this could finally move? Or does there seem to be a Republican brick wall to such a basic idea?
We have never had a Republican sign on to our Healthy School Meals for All bill. And we have never gotten a public hearing for this bill. And it's really unfortunate that we are debating hunger and feeding our kids. We should be banning hunger and not banning books. And I do hope that with more Democrats in the state assembly, increasing our numbers and knowing that Republicans have to go back to their communities saying they did something good, that this is what we can agree upon, feeding all of our kids a healthy school meal.
Exactly. I can't imagine a Republican in a swing district being asked point blank, you know, why you don't support this, why you wouldn't even give the bill a public hearing. I mentioned voucher schools a minute ago, and with Governor Evers giving his State of the State address tonight, I note here that Arizona's Governor, Democrat Katie Hobbs, gave her State of the State yesterday and really targeted the explosion of state funds going to voucher schools. We had my colleague Cam Stevenson from the Copper Courier on last week to talk about that as well. This continues to be a very real fiscal concern, never mind the threat to public education, but it's a real fiscal concern that voucher schools could truly blow up the state budget in the not too distant future.
I mean, regardless of your zip code, everyone loves their public schools, and it's a place of community. It's a place of bringing people together, and it's a place where all kids, no matter their background, ability, race, again, or neighborhood, should be able to thrive. And so for our state to be funding two school systems and moving towards privatization of education, which is ultimately what the right is aiming to do, it's a disgrace. And if you look across the country, regardless of political affiliation, folks are fighting for their public schools. Texas to Colorado, Arizona, Indiana. If you look at places who have universal voucher programs, their states are headed towards massive deficits. And it's because funding private schools with public dollars is not feasible. And ultimately, this is about our kids having access to the best education and us as taxpayers having politicians who follow the Constitution. It is every kid's constitutional right to have access to a good public school. And so when we undermine our public schools, when we give public dollars to private entities, we risk harming our kids. And ultimately, this is about our kids.
We are talking to State Representative Francesca Hong from the State Assembly Education Committee. On the Education Committee, it is, I think, a concern of a lot of us that there will be not so much a focus on educational issues as on culture war issues, things that actually target our children by folks who might feel emboldened by remarks made in the new president's inaugural address. Or are those concerns overblown?
No, they are not. And let me be crystal clear. For our vulnerable students, our students who are queer, our kids of color, all students who are don't have access to a high quality public education, Democrats are here to fight for each and every one of you. We should not be using kids as political footballs. They should never be a political target. And for Republicans to very intentionally go after queer or trans kids, it's incredibly disheartening and it's wrong. And it's cowardly, to be honest, because instead of debating the issues, we are distracting the public by weaponizing kids, trans kids, who just want to be kids, who just want to be able to navigate this incredibly difficult world for them right now with ease. And every kid should be able to be their most authentic selves and to thrive. And it's an absolute disgrace that Republicans insist on putting our kids in danger as opposed to working on policies that will help cut costs for families, like healthy school meals for all.
Not to mention the kids who, frankly, are still wrestling with sexual identity and gender identity. It is a mental health issue that these are kids who need support, they need resources, they need guidance, rather than being shunned, banned, shamed, marginalized, whatever the case may be. And we really appreciate having you on the Assembly Education Committee to help stick up for that very vulnerable population. I guess I could mention in passing that there is still the unfunded literacy mandate. That's more of a Joint Finance Committee thing where they're sitting on money that has been approved for literacy programs, but they continue sitting on it, wanting to micromanage, you know, the way that school districts spend the money. This is from the last budget. We're dealing with the new budget, and yet I sense, Representative Hong, that this standoff may go on for a bit yet.
It's getting tied up in the courts, which is not surprising that when Republicans don't get their way, they try to litigate their way out of it and use taxpayer dollars to fund their legal representation. This bill was already controversial, and I think it's incredibly unfortunate that when our educators and our administrators are now forced to grapple with implementing these new standards, that we are here still debating whether or not to fund it and give folks the resources to be able to implement this new literacy bill and be able to help and support our kids. And so once again, Republicans are weaponizing and withholding good things from our communities. And I really do hope that we can move past and that the committee releases these funds so that our educators and our administrators are able to follow the law.
Again, it's in the category of this shouldn't be a thing. This money was approved. It should be released. Here's another in that category, and stepping away from education for a moment, under the category of this shouldn't be a thing. That when it comes to expanding Medicaid coverage for new moms, that the federal government does have financial incentives to extend that coverage from, I think it's 60 days right now, to 12 months postpartum, because it's such a health hazardous time for women. And I think 48 states have done this, except Wisconsin and Arkansas. And yet, Fran, this is one of the most bipartisan ideas that's out there. One man stood in the way last session, and that same man is proudly saying he's going to stand in the way this session. Can you kind of fill in the background on expanding Medicaid coverage for new moms?
Robin Voss is always more interested in protecting his power than doing good for the people of Wisconsin. And for Robin Voss to be the lone obstacle on the most bipartisan bill and helping our new mothers ensure that they have the rest and the autonomy to be able to take care of themselves and their babies, and to get in the way of that, when we know that the majority of Wisconsinites want this, the majority of legislators want this, and yet Robin Voss is choosing to exert his power and try to leverage and again weaponize new moms and withhold funding and withhold the ability for us to pass this bill. And it's unfortunate, but again, not surprising, because this is who Voss is.
He wants us to basically fall into a rhetorical trap here where he lists all Medicaid as welfare and does not want any of it. He thinks it's government spending on welfare, and he lumps that into that category. He wants to have a debate on Medicaid as welfare. I'm pretty sure that there are plenty of Republicans on the other side of the aisle from you there in the Assembly who don't want to have that discussion, to bring it right down to the level of individual health for the women in their district, the women in their families.
Our families are struggling all across Wisconsin, and everyone just wants to be able to take care of themselves and their loved ones and ensure that they have access to economic security. And Robin Voss, once again, is more concerned about welfare for the rich and the powerful few, as opposed to making sure that our families have, again, an ability to take care of themselves. And for new mothers who already have gone through the traumatic experience of birth, not to have access to care, it's an absolute abomination. And once again, Republicans would rather prioritize making sure that the rich get tax cuts. They would prioritize making sure that wealthier families or families who already have access to great public schools have public dollars to send their kids to private schools. Again, welfare for the rich is not a new thing for Republicans, and they would rather tell you that folks who are struggling because of our inequitable wealth systems and the fact that wealth disparities have been growing for the last 20 years in this country, this is who they are. They would rather protect the wealthy and privileged few and themselves than actually do good for the families in Wisconsin.
And let me ask about the Attorney General Josh Call and Governor Evers joining a lawsuit that says that what President Trump wants to do with birthright citizenship, trying to strike it down, is an unconstitutional power grab. But between attacking birthright citizenship and threatening mass deportations, you know, what is the impact of that on Wisconsin families, the Wisconsin economy, and your own concerns about these kinds of policies?
Communities should not have to live in fear. I mean, when you have folks who are already struggling to take care of themselves and their families, and then you add this other layer of the fact that you may be taken away from your family, it's unconscionable. And I think that Republicans who would rather, force families to think about potentially being ripped apart as opposed to being able to thrive in their communities. We have immigrant families and immigrants who contribute greatly to every sector of this country, whether it's dairy farmers, whether it's folks who are in food packaging, the people who are washing our dishes in our restaurants. The dishwasher, by the way, is the most important person in a restaurant. It's incredibly disheartening and it's wrong. And so for Governor Evers and Attorney General Call to make sure that they state and are working to protect immigrants and folks who are undocumented in this country, gives us a sense of assurance that we have people fighting for them. And I think that it's important that we recognize that immigrants and undocumented folks pay taxes. They contribute to, again, every sector of this economy. And we are going to see costs rising. We are going to see quality of life become more detrimental for all families when we attack our undocumented and immigrant communities.
Representative Francesca Hong from Madison. Fran, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it, and we'll see you tonight for the State of the State.
Always happy to be here. Thanks, Pat.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
Hey, it's me time at Chula Vista. Time for you to pamper yourself. Wisconsin's most complete resort experience has everything you want. Fine-tuned for 70 years by four generations of the Kaminsky family, Chula Vista can be easygoing with colorful scenic river walks, 18 holes of classic golf, a relaxing spa, or you can go all out in 80,000 square feet of indoor water park. Ziplining through canyon views in Chula's Aerial Adventure Park. And dining comes any way you like it. From pizza to Wisconsin's number one ranked steakhouse. More than 600 guest rooms to choose from with $10 million in updates. Chula Vista, everything you've been wanting, all right here on site. Check it out at chulavistaresort.com.
Miles and miles of freshly groomed cross-country and hiking trails. Ski, sled, snowshoe. Warm up at our indoor water park. chulavistaresort.com.
A new choice. Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up hour one of the Civic Media Spotlight this week, we go to the Todd Alba Show. Todd dives into the story out of Milwaukee that the CBS affiliate there, Channel 58, fired their weather reporter, Sam Cuffell, for criticizing Elon Musk and his Nazi salute at the inauguration this week.
Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Glad to have you along. 34 past the hour of 12 noon on the Thursday, January 23rd, 2025. More serious news. Again, I didn't want to get into this whole Elon Musk Nazi salute thing because it's, again, I think it's a distraction over some bigger things. But it's come home now to Wisconsin because in this story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel yesterday by Dan Bice and Mary Spacuza, the local CBS affiliate, CBS 58, fired popular weather forecaster and meteorologist Sam Cuffell yesterday after she posted on her personal Instagram page criticism, although she dropped a couple of F-bombs in it, criticism of Elon Musk, who many people like myself would call it a Nazi salute. And by the way, it's important to remember of all this criticism of what Musk did that he has reportedly declined to say it wasn't an intentional Nazi salute. So if it wasn't, wouldn't you just say, look, this is disgusting. I repudiate Nazism. It's terrible. If someone took it that way, I'm embarrassed. But absolutely, that's not what it is.
But he can't say that because he supported the modern equivalent of the Nazi Party in Germany. And if he speaks out against them, it will not look good for his base.
Correct. As Ed McMahon once said, you are correct, sir. So there's that. Going to get to the phone calls here in just a minute. I want to put, and so what I said before the break, and I think this is important, that I here at Civic Media, Zomers, you don't have a written contract, right?
I do not.
So we serve at the pleasure. We could be fired at any time for any reason. You wake up one day and there's music playing at noon. Or the, I don't know what's going to happen. I have a handshake deal with our owner CEO. Tell the truth and do it with integrity. But it's not unusual in bigger companies in media to have a written contract. And they have the prerogative to put anything in there they want. My sources are telling me that's the case at CBS 58. I have not been able to confirm that. I want to be clear. So when back in a prior life, when I used to run a sports pub, the Tilted Kilt here in Madison, that's a whole other bottle of wine. We had a policy, front of house, back of house, no call, no show, one strike and you're out. Which means if you don't call in and tell us you're going to be late or you can't make it, and you don't show up for your shift, and unless there is a tragedy such as a car accident or an immediate family member suddenly dying, you're gone. So I had hired a family friend, a young guy, really great guy named Mike, was a great bartender, and one Saturday he was a no-call, no-show. And he was honest and said, I just spaced. And I said, Mike, look, people know that, you know, we hired you for your qualifications, but people know that our families have a connection. If I treat you differently, I lose the trust of the restaurant. He goes, no, I get it. And I had to let him go. 3 months later, we had a bar opening. My bar manager, Lily, came to me and said, I want to bring Mike back. I said, well, we follow the policies. If you want him back, you pull all the other bartenders and make it clear this is your idea. She did. Everybody was in support of it, and we brought him back. But we followed the rules. And again, my sources are telling me that's what happened at CBS 58 Milwaukee, that there was a rule that you couldn't do this. Now, again, what Musk did is atrocious, and it should be called out. But the question is, what does it say about local media in Wisconsin if they're that sensitive? If it's a contract issue, a legal issue, that's one thing. But if they're that sensitive to criticism of appearing to be a Nazi salute, then what are they telling their news department that they can and can't report if it's critical of the Trump agenda in Wisconsin? 855-752-4842 if you want to dial in and weigh in on this firing by CBS 58 of their meteorologist who was critical of Elon Musk. Let's go to Mark in Prairie du Sac. Mark, thanks for holding. What say you?
Yeah, when you can't criticize Nazism, I don't know what the heck's going on, regardless of whether she had a contract or not. I mean, it is just that because looking at Elon Musk in context, I mean, because, yes, he has supported this neo-Nazi, neo-fascist group in Germany. I mean, I saw another video clip of him whipping that, and then whipping around and turning behind him and doing the same kind of gesture, a heart, hand over the heart, then snapping a salute behind him and spinning around again. I remember hearing about Nazism back when I was in fifth grade. A teacher probably get fired about that today because she talked about the death camps. I mean, that the context of Nazism in this country, when you cannot call out Nazism and even a Nazi adjacentism, I mean, even in strong language, that's complete, you know, freedom of speech is supposed to mean something. And that, yes, maybe there's something in the contract and maybe a suspension would have been in order, but to fire her over something like that, that we fought a war against Nazism as America and the rest of the free world did. And to let go the deaths that Nazism and fascism has caused, to just ignore that fact because, you know, Elon Musk, it's my understanding his grandparents were Nazis in Canada and that his father left and went to South Africa because he didn't quite like, you know, that it was too liberal for him in Canada and went to the loving arms of apartheid in South Africa, and that's what he was suckled on.
Yeah. Mark, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for the call. Off the text line, you can text us at the Civic Media app. Let's see here. We have Carolyn listening on AUK in beautiful Heartland. Carolyn says, another thing about CBS 58, one of their main male anchors got arrested for an OWI and was suspended on air, is now back on air. different rules for male and female. Grr. I like the grr at the end. I think that's a legit comment. And again, I want to make clear, I cannot prove beyond, you know, I don't have a contract in front of me. Simply what my sources are telling me is that CBS 58 has contracts with their all of their anchors. And that this was a violation of contract, not specifically over calling out a Nazi salute, but rather doing something that was deemed in the eyes of the company as a political or taking a stance. Doesn't make it any more right. I'm just saying that's one of the things that we don't know. Say what you want about Dom Rumsfeld. One of the great quotes, there are things that we know, there are things that we don't know, and there are things that we don't know we don't know. Back with more after this is the Tallaball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
Tate Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome comedian and founder of Chip's Money Tips, Chip Chinnery, and filmmaker Nathan Deming, who is touring Wisconsin to promote his film February. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
This message is sponsored by WisCaregiver.com. People across Wisconsin are enjoying the rewards, stability, and flexibility of a career in healthcare. Why not you? WisCaregiver.com gets you started. Choose between two great options. Become a CDCP, Certified Direct Care Professional, or a CNA, Certified Nurse Aide. Training is free. Plus, earn a $500 bonus. It's easy to start your new career. Learn more at WisCaregiver.com.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. It appears the U.S. and Colombia are in a tariff tiff. President Trump promises a tariff on Colombian exports of 25%, going up to 50% after 1 week. This after Colombia blocked U.S. deportation flights into that country. Now, Colombia's president is raising tariffs on U.S. goods by 25%. CBS's Camilo Montoya Galvez.
The Trump administration is laser focused on making sure it can deport as many people who are in the country illegally as possible, especially along the U.S.-Mexico border.
Economics professor Madeline Zabodny of the University of Florida says,
under the Biden administration, we had lots of growing regional cooperation to limit the migration flows north. And so it's pretty important that we continue to work throughout the region to limit those flows.
One of the cities where federal immigration personnel are conducting operations today.